You're listening to Building the Game with Rob and Jason.
It's Building the Game with Jason and Rob. For tabletop game design, you really can't go wrong. Building the game, yeah, building the game.
We got a ways to go for that.
Right. Yeah.
You guys start an episode?
We've basically already started at this point.
But you have to say the thing.
All right, I'll say
I want you to have a chance to screw it up.
All right. Hello and welcome to Building the Game, a documentary podcast. Today is Monday, May 1st, 2017. You're listening to episode 257. My name is Rob. Jason is sitting here with me. We are in Florida. We're in Orlando, Florida, at the Hilton. We're on a business trip, as it turns out.
Yes.
Yeah. And there's a lot to talk about, but before we do that, I should make sure that everybody knows we have a special guest here.
We do.
We have a special guest with us, a gentleman who...
We talk about a lot.
Mostly
we mentioned to the guy who we work with.
Yeah, mostly you, because you're a suck-up. We have a gentleman here who I think has been listening to the show for a little while.
Before I started working with
you. Yeah. Oh, yeah, quite. That was an interesting coincidence
that happened. That was pretty weird.
Yeah. We have Alan with us. Hi.
Hey.
Thanks for joining us.
Well, my pleasure. And can I just say, actually, for the listeners, they don't realize how much you guys actually do. You say you don't prepare, but you do, because their makeup is on fleek. Absolutely.
Wait, what? On fleek? Is that a thing?
You've never heard that
term? I know this. What is this?
Wow. Yeah, it's even hard to describe. It just means, like, on point.
On point?
In business.
Yeah.
In business.
It's like tight.
Yeah. But
it's like business.
There's a
type.
Video. Go look up the video of a woman talking about her makeup being on fleek.
It's like if we said this podcast is lit, right? That's also
right.
That
right? Yeah.
This is the squad, and the podcast is lit. Squad goals. Hashtag squad goals.
Squad.
Squad's like a thing now. People say that. Instead of posse, I think squad is the new posse.
Okay.
Was there something between there, though?
I don't know.
Posse, and then I don't know.
Right.
Posse was like Wild West. Uh-huh. And then I think it was gang for a while.
Does this fit in with horizontals and verticals?
guys, here's the big special announcement. He couldn't join us tonight, but less than 200 yards from here, Kevin Costner is singing music. Mm-hmm. And we left because it was hella boring.
He is a very talented actor.
Exactly. Yes. As a singer, he's a very talented actor.
Right. Yeah. So I didn't mean to steal your joke.
But if you're going to steal it, say it right. That's all I'm saying.
You're right. I fumbled it.
No, it was inoffensive, but not particularly interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, so we're at a mortgage conference, because that's the business we're in.
Yeah.
And
because we know how to party.
Yeah. Turns out there's some serious partying going on at mortgage conferences. But, the special guest of honor here is Kevin Costner, because he, I guess, is an investor in a company that does mortgage products and software.
Yep.
And that's probably the whole story we don't need to share anymore.
He told a longer story, but it wasn't that interesting.
Hey, he's
the other stuff he said was interesting, but that part
wasn't.
He's
a charismatic guy.
He is a very charismatic guy.
Yeah.
And he wants you to know, this is important, that he kissed Whitney Houston one time for you and one time for him.
Yeah. Right.
That was the takeaway from his speech.
Yeah. Yes. Now, something else you guys don't know.
Oh, no.
I haven't told you this. I don't think anybody else has told you the story yet.
This is not good.
I got here a day before you guys. I got here on Friday. Okay?
Why'd you get here on Friday?
I'm sorry, Saturday.
Oh.
Yeah, sorry.
Why'd you get here
on Friday? 2 days. Saturday. Hey, when you travel on a Saturday,
I know,
it's weird, right? So I got here on Saturday, and we were, me and Taryn and Tammy, who are a couple of our coworkers, we were downstairs waiting for our Uber to take us someplace for dinner. And a guy comes out, and he's got long blonde hair and a ponytail and a big nose, and he's old, and he's wearing like fingerless gloves with studs on them, and a t-shirt, a black t-shirt with the arms ripped off, and on the back in like rhinestones it says "F you." I'll believe it. Don't worry.
He always
in sunglasses, and he stomps out the front door and yells at a couple of guys in a van. And then they don't say anything, and then he stops closer and yells at them again, and then he gets in the van and they all drive away. And that man was D. Snyder.
No way!
Seriously.
That's awesome.
And Tammy and Taryn and I were like, was that? It was, right?
Oh, wow.
Whoa.
Wow.
watched. Does he still look like Dee Snider?
Oh yeah,
like he hasn't changed.
Not used. I mean, older,
he was grizzled looking before, so he was.
And you could tell if he didn't have all the makeup and the hair or whatever. He's not a pretty guy.
No, it's like the time when Kiss took their makeup off and everyone was like, "Put it back on,
put it back."
Yeah, that was pretty. That was a close encounter.
These conferences are insane for running into famous people.
Yeah,
because I saw Charles Barkley two times ago and scared him away, incidentally.
Well, I was
with Shelley.
I didn't even know who he was.
He's one of the few basketball players that would actually know. Sir Charles, man. I don't know why they call him that. But anyway, so like we saw him at a distance. And I was like, Shelley, it's Charles Barkley. It's Charles Barkley. And I think he heard me and he like kept looking at me like, who's this crazy white kid over there?
Yeah.
And then he left. Like, hurriedly.
He scared Charles Barkley.
I don't know why. He's like three times my size. The guy's huge.
Yeah.
He'd pummel me. And who else? There's somebody else famous we saw on one of these trips.
I still think Dee Snider is cooler than Charles Barkley.
Well, dude, Dee Snider, you know who else Dee Snider is cooler than? Kevin Costner.
Yeah, definitely.
I remember there was somebody else famous. Oh, when I went to the Mortgage Builder Conference with you, I saw Ethan Hawke. At the airport. Yeah, and Katie, who works with us, was losing her mind.
That's right.
I was like, let's go, I'll introduce you. Let's go talk to him. And like, she was like, ah, wah, ah.
Just all gaga over anyone famous.
Yeah.
Because I told her my friend that's a writer in Hollywood, and she just can't take the stuff.
She just can't take it.
And she'll never listen to this, so we can make all the fun of her.
We can. Kind of like our wives, too.
Yeah. Right. We never make fun of
our wives. If one of us ever get super mad at each other, we could just say to each other, like, go listen to the back catalog. And we would be in trouble. But here's the good news. I'm pretty confident neither of our wives would commit that long. They'd listen to like three episodes and just give up.
No.
They might not even make it through three episodes.
No.
I have my own reasons to be mad at him.
My wife has listened to exactly one episode of Building the Game. You want to guess which one?
The Josiah.
The Josiah episode.
Hey, guess what? So is my wife. Yeah. The same one and the only one.
Got to be one of your best episodes ever.
It was pretty good.
It was pretty great.
It was pretty good. Yeah. We will have him back at some point, I'm sure. So he's ready. He asks me every week.
Yeah.
Can I record Building the Game this week? Not this week, buddy.
Hey, all you builders out there.
Hey, you builders out there. He said that like 100 times.
Yep.
Oh my gosh. That was pretty funny.
So, you know what's a lot cooler than mortgage banking? Board games.
Board games. Oh yeah.
Way cooler than mortgage banking.
It's hard to find the things that are way cooler, you know.
I mean, mortgage banking's up there. It's up there as a cool thing.
Well, clearly, I mean, Kevin Costner's glommed onto it,
right.
So it must be him.
One of the coolest guys on the planet.
Yes.
Basically.
I mean,
not as cool as Dee Snider.
No, not nearly.
He is neat.
He is neat.
You get that? That's a truth or dare?
I only get that joke because you told me.
Because I told you about it earlier.
Oh, yeah.
In truth or dare, he told Madonna the concert was neat, and then she made fun of him mercilessly.
Yeah, that's what he said. See, we should have known he was a nice, down-to-earth guy when he said something was neat.
Exactly.
Because, like, what kind of jerk says, that's neat? Like, that's just not...
Right.
Yeah, also, we're all drinking a little bit here, so...
Yes.
Yeah,
we've been drinking, and we're still drinking.
Yeah. Florida beer, I've got a... Jason
what is
and
that?
I both. This
yeah,
is the
Funky Buddha Hefeweizen.
Yep.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. It's good. It's my second one of the night. So
good.
Plus something else before that. Oh, no, it's my third one. Yeah, that's what it is. losing count. So one of the best kept secrets of mortgage conferences are they give you a lot of free liquor and beer.
There's lots of free bars.
Yeah, like that's just their thing.
Yeah,
like,
people think mortgage banking sounds very boring, but it turns out mortgage banking, they were like the black, the redheaded stepchildren of the financial industry.
Yeah.
We're the trouble.
We like to party.
Yeah.
We do.
Yeah.
Yes.
There's always open bars.
Always.
Yeah. Yeah, and always vendors to buy you drinks.
Yeah.
So.
And always everybody looking a little haggard the next morning.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's true. It is true.
All right. So anyway, you were trying to get us...
I was trying to get us off onto a topic that the builders care about.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
Do they care about board games? I mean, really? Do they?
Well, I think more than mortgage banking.
Let's take a poll, guys.
Yeah. No, polls don't work.
They don't, because Len will call us and be like, I don't like mortgage banking, and that's all we'll hear. So
call 770-TEL-BTG and tell us what you think of mortgage banking.
Yes.
Right.
You know who likes mortgage banking and may or may not be listening?
Who's that?
Joe Hopkins.
Joe Hopkins is,
he works in mortgage banking.
I don't think he listens to our show, though.
I don't know, but he's a nice guy.
He's a nice guy.
One of the nicest guys you'll ever meet.
Yep.
How does it sound when Jason talks into his beer glass?
Terrible.
Does that make it different?
Does it sound? Can you tell the difference between the beer glass and not?
I just have a feeling something's getting edited out of this episode.
Oh, Rob will edit this episode.
I edit for long pauses and F-bombs mostly.
This is the good news for Rob, though. Like, I'm far enough away that I'm not sniffling and stuff, so he doesn't have to worry about that as much.
Have to mute the sniffles.
I did notice when he cracked his knuckles, though.
That was nice.
I've actually, as bad as I know I still am, I've actually gotten better about that stuff. Like, I will purposely turn away or wait till you pause to talk so that I know it's an easy cut. I do try. Because you know why? Because I've had to edit a few episodes and I wanted to punch myself in the throat.
Yeah.
Because it's like, oh my gosh, stop doing that.
Yeah.
So the last, when I did the episode with John Gilmore.
Also, when you put your hand in front of your face, that's good too.
I don't mean to do that. Yeah. The episode I had with John Gilmore. I, for some reason, had the mic like right here. I did right in my face for people at home, for all you builders out there. But so I literally could hear myself breathing.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
So every time he spoke, I had to cut all of my audio.
Yeah.
Because it was literally like, and I had a cold. I sounded like Darth Vader with a cold.
Yeah. That's why I tell you to pull back from the mic.
It's true. Yeah. Well, you weren't there to do that. So it's all right. John had smart stuff to say, so it was worth editing.
Good. Have you played any board games lately? Or tabletop games. How about
tabletop
that?
Tabletop games. It's been a little while, but I had a friend who got Mechs and Minions, and he's so in love with it that that's all we've played recently. The last five times I've played, it's been Mechs and Minions.
Okay, explain what this is.
Okay, so Mechs and Minions is based on a computer game that I can't remember the name of right now.
It wasn't called Mechs and Minions?
No. I don't think so. But anyway, it was a really popular computer game, apparently. And I'm sure everybody that's listening knows
what it was. Screaming at us.
Was it like MechWarrior or something like that?
I don't know.
Or what was that big one?
Battletech?
No, it's not basically. Battletech. Okay. But, yeah, I don't know. Get your phone out and look at it, and I'll describe the game, and we can figure it out. But it's a cooperative game.
Okay.
And you've got, each of you plays one of the characters from the computer game, and you've got a mech that you're on, and the minions come out. Basically, you have missions that you play, and you have a board where you program the moves that you're going to make. So you draw cards, and as you select cards, those are actions that you put on your program board, and they go left to right on your little board, because it's just a... You know, it's got seven slots or something like that. But what happens during the game is when you take damage, your program gets messed up. So you draw a damage card, and it'll do things like rearrange the cards on your board so they happen in a different order. Or it'll replace or cover up one of the cards. So you take a random an action that you have to take. And you have a mission objective... So in a nutshell, I mean, that's what a lot of it is, and it's pretty cool. The production value of it is fantastic, especially for the price.
A lot of minis.
It was all minis. It's all minis. Okay. And it's tons of minis, and the whole box is just gorgeous. And it's not that expensive. I can't remember the price, but I thought it should have been like $30 or $40 more than it was, because they weren't really trying to make money with it, and it was a limited edition.
It was
a
Kickstarter?
So, I don't know if they did it. It's a Kickstarter or not.
Okay.
But many minis, they probably should have.
Yeah. Because they had the money to produce this game from the computer game.
Oh, okay.
So it was sort of like just something they wanted to do. So, and they weren't board game designers. They got board game designers to come help them, from what I understand.
Right on.
To do this thing. I assume anyone will call in with corrections to my
story.
Probably,
yeah.
Glenn?
But only while he's driving.
Yeah. Right, exactly.
That actually sounds super cool. So all the players are controlling mechs.
Yeah.
And you're fighting the minions.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
And the minions, are the minions different, like, classes and things? Or are they they're all the same little creature?
They're pretty much all the same.
Okay.
And then when you get to certain, there's some super minion thing.
The boss
kind of thing.
Yeah.
At some point. And there's also this, like, sometimes the scenario is you have a bomb, and you have to move it from one place to the other on the board. Without it getting destroyed. And the minions will attack it. And what happens, actually, is that the minions all just take one hit to kill. So some of the actions you take are movement. Some of them are to deal damage in various ways. And you can power them up by stacking cards on top of each other if they're the same color. So there's like four colors. And the minions, when they come, though, often they come in droves. Like, you're suddenly surrounded. You don't know how you could possibly ever win.
Okay.
And then you end up winning anyway. So it's kind of really fun because you just mow through all these minions.
It's kind of wave-based.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Kind of, okay, so these guys are... I'm trying to think in video game terms. Kind of wave-based creeps. Those guys are probably...
It's almost like a tower defense style.
Maybe a little bit, but depending on the goal...
So, with the programmed action, does it feel like you're wandering around in drunk robots, or does it feel like you know what you're doing?
A little bit.
Yeah,
it does. So, that's the funny thing, is the actions, there's a certain amount that's programmed, but you still have a certain amount of discretion. Like, the action is to move, but sometimes you can move, and you have choices for which direction, and you can just, you know, shoot, or whatever, but you can choose which guys to kill. So it's a mix of programmed and choice.
So it's not like Dragon and Flagon, where it really just felt like we were drunk people wandering around a bar, sometimes running into each other.
Right. Mm-hmm. That one, it was like totally programmed, right? Mm-hmm. Pretty much. So in this one, though, sometimes you do end up like at the opposite end of the board, completely useless, shooting at the wall. I mean, it happens. And it's pretty funny, frankly. It's kind of entertaining. Yeah, so it's pretty fun.
Okay.
I don't need to play it every single time we play a game. But
you might. You might get to.
Too bad.
But, yeah, exactly. For now, I'm good. You spent the money on it, I'm happy to play it.
And that, to me, sounds like good program movement. Like, Dragon and Flagon just felt so... Like, almost every turn was, my action is wasted.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I got a little better towards the end of trying to be like, okay, I'm going to do this because I think this is the most likely way to get something. But because everyone was so random with what they were doing and there were like six of us playing, it was just chaos. It felt like a bar fight. It just felt like a really ineffectual bar fight.
Right. And you would do things in that game you would never do in a bar fight because you can react faster.
Yeah.
Right. Right?
But it the thing about it was that you couldn't... When you were programming your action, there was almost, you're right, no chance that it was actually going to have the intended effect.
Right. The best things really were power actions. Like, I ended up winning that game, and I won that game because I used my power action, whatever that was called, where I swung across the bar, and anyone that was in the line, I hit. And it just so happened that everyone happened to be lined up, and I picked that move because I went across a lot of spaces, so I thought, best chance at hitting someone, and I hit like four people.
Turns out you were right.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I just got lucky, though.
Really,
I mean, mean, that's so...
Well, that's a valid mechanic to do things where you're just maximizing your chances, but somehow, it just felt like it didn't work.
I think that would be cooler if it had been, like, when you get to an action, you can take that action or swap it with the next action.
Oh, right? That would be interesting.
So, you have two choices. You always have two choices, and maybe both those choices are terrible, but you still get a choice, right? Mm-hmm.
Have we moved into the topic?
I think we've moved into the topic.
Yeah, so we're talking about program movement here. So I haven't played many program movement games. I'm kind of actually struggling to think of one.
And think of programmed action in general. So
Programmed action. So I'm actually struggling to think of anyone that I've actually played. And I know that I have, but I can't remember. But I tried to do it with that zombie racing game. And in that, I tried to justify the, you know, the aimless wandering and lack of control. I tried to explain that by making, it's zombies walking around an arena. Like turtle racing, you know? You just kind of, they're going to go whichever way they want to go, and you just hope for the best. but it still felt just so aimless and awkward and out of control and not fun. I'm not sure how to do it. Where, I mean, maybe if it's just chaotic and crazy, maybe that's okay. But you got to add some kind of options in there, right? Some kind of player input.
I do think the idea of being able to swap the actions would be that. I think that automatically makes it more valid and more viable because you've got a choice. But,
And it's interesting with the between the two that we just talked about, the bar brawl, I forget the name of
Dragon and Flagon.
Right, Dragon and Flagon and Mechs and Minions. And Mechs and Minions... because it mixes that programming actions with the choice when you execute the action to do it in different ways,
right?
It balances it better. But to me, it doesn't feel like a program movement game at that point.
Okay,
right.
It kind of doesn't matter what your program is, and often it doesn't even matter what the order is of the cards,
right?
On there, so it doesn't quite get it for me.
It could also work if in the game it was program movement only, or programmed actions only. And the other movement or actions is free, right? Like, you do that, You make so on the turn, I'm going to punch someone, pick something up, and do something else, right? And blow up a minion, right? But during that turn, I also get three movement spaces, and I can use those however I want, whenever I want. So that would allow me to know what actions I was going to do, but maybe tweak where I was going to be standing when those actions happened, or vice versa. I'm going to take this path, and I've got, but then I play cards to take actions while I'm on the path, and I, you know, I can play them. So there's six spaces I'm going to move in this L shape. At any point during those, I can play a card to say I'm going to do this, and maybe I can do that twice during my turn. That to me seems a lot more viable. And there may be games that already do that. I don't know. I haven't played them. If there are,
that sounds interesting, actually, because you could, you know what cards you have. And you know, you plan out a path that you want to take with the cards that you have for actions, but when you see what other people are doing, it might not work out the way you think.
Right.
And then you can adjust on the fly with which actions you take at which points, even if your movement is fixed.
I was trying to think
that's interesting.
A theme that could fit with that, like some sort of railroad track automatically popped in my head, right? Because you're stuck in, or a river where it's like, you know, rapids are pushing you around, so it's... You know, you can see the path of, I'm going to move five squares. I can tell what five squares I have to move based on the path.
What if you're like on a tank and the tank driver can't see where he's going and you're the gunner and the tank driver, you're going to shout down commands to him about what to do. And then he's going to enter the battle. And then all you can do is, well, everybody's over there and he's driving that way. So I'm going to turn and shoot my turret anyway. Or something
yeah,
like that.
That could work, yeah. Drunk tanks.
Drunk tanks. That's actually a really good name. The tank driver's drunk and he can't see out the window.
Yeah, so the game that got me on this, like where I got really interested in program movement, nobody's ever heard of, I'm sure. When I was a kid, and I'm a little older than you guys, there's a game called Barbarian Kings. Okay. And it was chits on a map, and there were different races, and you'd have get the armies, you'd buy them, so you'd own certain territories that would give you a certain amount of points with which to buy armies of that race. And so there were orcs, and there were some balloon, like guys who had war balloons.
Nice.
War balloons. Pretty cool. But every turn you'd have to program all of your army's movements. And they all had different movement costs, and you would execute all together one movement at a time. Mm-hmm. And then you'd have the battles where you had them and figure out who took over which territories based on who moved through what. And I always loved that game.
Mm-hmm.
Possibly because I was much better at it than the friends that I was playing with at the time, but that's how it goes,
sure, right? That feels like you're being justified there too, right? Like,
yeah, absolutely.
The armies are moving. You have to program that movement because you can't just do it on the fly.
Exactly. There's no walkie-talkies.
Right.
You give them the orders and then they execute the orders.
Right.
Yeah.
Huh.
So many things in the past that would have been easier if they just had cell phones.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
Right. How many... I read something... every movie from the 80s would have been solved with a cell phone.
Right.
Yeah.
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 I wonder if that must make it hard for writers now.
It must, right?
Well, they just... Most shows now where somebody could call have the obligatory scene where someone pulls out their phone, sees their zero bars, and then moves on.
And then they're done.
Yeah.
Right.
So, yeah.
All right. Whew.
I've lost had that. Like, when they crash the plane, holding his phone up. Nope. Throws his phone. Okay, well, move on, right?
Yeah.
We can't call someone, so I guess we'll move on.
But it seems to me that they, back to the topic actually, that thing of combining...
He's not a very good guest on the show. No. He's like, back to the topic, guys.
Oh, is that bad? I'm sorry.
No, it's fine. That's how I like to do things.
But the difference, like what works and what doesn't, is some combination there where you're programming but you still have some choice. That seemed to be like the...
It's got
to
be,
right? Difference.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I think that makes a big difference.
Because otherwise, maybe if it's predictable enough or whatever, but it seems like if you're left to predict too much, chaos theory takes over. You couldn't possibly predict what everybody else is doing if there's three other people in a game or whatever.
Well, that's what people always say about Robo Rally, right? I've never played it, but Robo Rally, it's pure program movement, and you have no idea what anybody else is about to do, and it just ends up being robots moving all over the board. And some people love it because, hey, it's crazy and chaos, and that's silly and fun. And some people just despise it because they have no control over what.
I need more control than that in a game.
Yeah,
I feel like I'm playing a game.
Too. Yeah,
I haven't played Robo Rally either.
Yeah,
I know a lot of people love it though.
Yeah, sure,
classic.
It is.
Yeah, I mean, it's old enough that it was around when I was a kid.
Oh, okay.
When I started gaming. Yeah.
Yeah.
It might be interesting if you had a game where there was, like, movement cards, right? So it's a shape of movement. Think of Onitama, right?
Yeah.
Have you seen Onitama? I think I showed that to you. It's like a chess-style game where you've got the different movements. So think of that, right? Mm-hmm. So this is the movement you have to take. Everyone plays one face down, goes into the center, and then shuffle, and everybody gets one, and that's their movement for the turn. So now your movement is completely randomized. I know that's not programmed movement. It kind of is. Everyone's programming. It's just you don't know which one you're going to get. And then you take actions based on what you're doing.
That sounds terrible.
Program, yeah, actually, yeah. That, like, we're wanting control. That's...
Right. Someone else wants to program my movement for me, but even he doesn't exactly know what movement he's going to be giving me or who's. Yeah, that's.
I mean, it could be that you just program your opponent's movement. Like, this is where you're going this turn. So.
Wow. Ooh. I'm trying to come up with a theme for that.
Remote control drunk tanks.
Yeah, I mean, you could kind of concoct some, boy, I don't know. I mean, you could come up with something to justify it, but it would feel really forced, I think.
Right.
It'd have to be perfect, really get a theme.
Just the right
thing. Sense, yeah. I just like the idea that I choose where you go, but you choose what you do when you get there.
Right.
Right.
I mean, I'm not going to say it's a bad idea. There might be something in that, but...
King Solomon's tanks.
Yeah.
Could be King Solomon's mines, right? I mean, they can't be because that's like a movie, right? Or a book or something.
It was a movie.
Yeah.
So it's a movie, so you can't use that without getting sued. So that sucks, but...
Hey, you can't copyright a title.
Hey, Minecart Madness.
You can't copyright a title.
No, I did not know. You can trademark it, though.
Oh, I see. So.
Yeah. They might have done that.
They might have, yeah. But those are different laws, and I don't know the details of those differences.
Neither do I.
So,
yeah. Let's make a game called Star Wars.
Oh, okay. All right. Is that a program movement in it?
Sure.
Yeah. So, let's say that... No, never mind. That joke
We already pitched a Star Wars game once on this show.
I think several times.
Yeah. True.
Yeah, well, woo. We gained some real insight on that topic, didn't we?
Nailed it.
As always.
To recap, I think the big thing we learned is that if it's pure programmed, that's not fun for anyone who actually likes playing games. It's only fun for people who like activities where they have to plan. It's for people who like planning, but not executing.
I don't want to make declarative statements about what is fun or what is not fun because everybody has their own opinions. I think we would say that we are not necessarily as interested in that.
We took a vote.
And 100% of respondents agree.
Kevin Costner's vote is still out, but we think he agrees with us.
Okay, well, there's a good chance. Yeah.
He's a storyteller after all.
He said so.
And he was telling stories with his band, but you couldn't understand him. It sounded like this. Sweetheart. Hotel.
Like, well, it's a corporate gig, so only half the room was paying attention. The other half was trying to chat. And because there's music playing, they were shouting at each other.
Yeah.
And then it was in a big hotel ballroom, so the acoustics were terrible.
And then because we're good at math, the third half of us just left.
Right.
Yeah. So.
I thought it might have been because he's not the strongest singer, so his mic volume wasn't too high.
Well, that could be too.
Yeah. He wasn't awful, but he wasn't.
Yeah.
He was. Yeah.
He's a fine actor.
That's the joke of the evening for us. He's an Oscar winner.
Which
Oscar winner?
He won it for Dance with the Wolves. What else did he win an Oscar for?
I don't remember.
Probably not Waterworld.
What else did he direct?
Waterworld.
He's got two Best Pictures, right?
I don't know.
Dances and...
I don't know, actually.
I don't... Maybe he won Best Picture and Best Director. Maybe those are his multiples.
Dances. Yeah.
That's what it was.
Yeah, yeah.
It wasn't two different movies. It was two different awards for the one movie.
So basically he did something good one time.
Yeah, and I think he won an Emmy for his acting in that.
They said he was an Emmy winner.
Yeah.
An Emmy for Dances with Wolves? No, that doesn't make any sense.
Emmy's TV.
Oh, you're right.
Yeah.
So was it the Hatfield and McCoy thing? He did that, didn't he?
No idea.
He wasn't in Hatfield and McCoy's, was he?
Yeah, he was, and he did all, his band did all the music for that. I read it on the interwebs, so it's got to be true.
He was in Hatfield. That was halfway decent. I watched
it. I didn't see it.
The Hatfield and McCoy's?
Yeah.
He was in Batman vs. Superman. He was Pa Kent?
Yeah, he's, yeah.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
He's, well, he's in both of those. Well, he's in...
Notice he left that off his resume. Yeah, Hatfield and McCoy's.
Yeah.
So he never won an acting Oscar, though, did he?
No.
Not a bad actor.
No, he's fine. He's, yeah, good, he's good, yeah. Yeah, it made me want to watch the Eastwood movie, A Perfect World.
Hmm.
I wanted, that's, yeah, that was, I always liked that one.
Oh, really? I didn't really care for that.
Yeah, it was good.
It was a long time ago, though, so maybe I just don't remember.
And 3,000 Miles to Graceland is great.
It is great in a really weird, messed up way, yeah.
Yeah, I really enjoy that movie.
It's a bunch of people as Elvis impersonators.
Yeah.
Oh, that's right.
And they go and rob other bank robbers or something like that.
Uh-huh.
It's just stupid and bizarre and fun.
Yeah, yeah.
It's weird. Kevin Costner and Christian Slater and a couple other guys. I don't remember. I just remember Christian Slater and Kevin Costner. I'm a big Christian Slater fan, by the way.
Oh, yeah?
Christian Slater's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Always.
Yeah. I mean, he plays Christian Slater in every movie.
Oh, yeah.
No.
He plays Jack Nicholson.
That's true. Exactly.
Yes.
First movie, Heathers, he played Jack Nicholson.
Yeah.
Fair enough,
for sure.
I think that movie's great, though.
He kind of plays Jack Nicholson in every movie.
It was pronounced in Heathers.
All right, you're right.
Unmistakable.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So, interesting story. He has never won an Oscar for Best Actor.
Right.
Yeah, that's what we just said.
Oh, did you?
Yeah.
For Dances, it was Best Picture and Best Director.
That's what we just said.
That's the multiple.
But he was nominated for Best Actor, but he did not win.
Yeah.
Right.
In case you had, he didn't win.
He didn't win.
Did not win.
He won an Emmy, though.
No.
For something else, as actor. They made a big
deal.
He won
a Golden Globe for Hatfield and McCoy's.
Okay.
For Best Actor in a miniseries. That's not a real hard category. Oh, no, he did win an Emmy for... Oh, also for that same... Yeah, you were
right. All right, so I was right. Hey, look at that. Rob's right for a change.
He needs to go... Doesn't he need to go to Broadway then?
What? Oh, did he get an EGOT?
Well, he's got to get a Grammy.
He's got to get a Grammy and a Tony. Yeah,
yeah, but based on that performance, I don't see a Grammy happening anytime
soon. Well, it is Grammy. It's not Golden Globe.
No,
yeah,
Grammys are for recorded.
But right. He got one G. Isn't that good enough?
Yeah. You're right. But he would need a Tony. And then he's got kind of an EGOT. Do you know the EGOT thing?
Yeah.
Okay.
How does he not know what that is?
Well, I don't know. Some people don't watch this.
There's not a lot of people that have that, though, right? That's pretty...
Yeah, I have no idea. Yeah. I know
they were saying Lin-Manuel Miranda was close.
Lin-Manuel Miranda?
Lin-Manuel Miranda.
Yeah. Everybody loves that guy.
He's awesome.
Yeah.
Because he's pretty awesome.
I saw him on John Oliver once, and that was pretty good.
You know where the only place I had seen him before, and I loved him, was on Electric Company.
For
watching
real?
With my kids, yes.
Yeah?
He did this thing, Silent E as a Ninja, and it's... Just look it up on YouTube.
Silent E as a Ninja?
Silent E is a Ninja.
Silent E is
a Ninja. Silent E is a Ninja. Yeah, it's
okay.
He was also on, Jimmy Fallon, maybe? Yeah, and they do Wheel of Raps.
Okay.
And they have to do freestyle rapping, but Jimmy Fallon doesn't because he's not a rapper, so he has the dude from The Roots rap.
Oh, sure.
Because he can actually rap.
Right.
And Lin-Manuel Miranda was amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I'm a John Oliver. He rapped something about Puerto Rico. Mm-hmm. When Puerto Rico was struggling.
I saw that.
Yeah, it was really good.
Yeah.
Really good.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it was like several years back, he was like at the poetry day at the White House with Obama.
Oh, yeah?
And he's like, I'm going to do a rap about the most original gangster I know. Alexander Hamilton. And then he did a song that ended up being one of the main songs to Hamilton.
Oh, wow.
Before it was written. Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah. So
that's very cool. We need to pitch a game, gentlemen.
So yeah, let's do that.
Yeah. Are we going to pitch Drunk Tank? I don't think we should.
No.
I think we need to come with something else.
Yeah, sure.
I don't know. I don't want to do Program Movement either because it scares me.
All right.
Okay.
So, all right. So, we need a mechanic.
Okay.
Someone say a mechanic.
I'm going to say...
randomized resources.
I don't know what that means.
I don't either. Make something up.
We invented a new mechanic.
A new mechanic.
Randomized resources. So
you get resources, but you don't know what you're going to get.
I think that means there's a deck of cards with different resources in it and shuffle it up and you just deal out.
So whenever you earn a resource, you get a random resource. Okay. That could also be pulling out of a bag.
Mm-hmm. Could also be that.
Yeah.
I know a game that where you pull cubes out of a bag. Actually, you pull colored things out of a bag. Yeah. It's a pretty fun game.
We should make the resources different shapes.
I love that Kickstarter.
My kids like that game, actually.
Oh, good.
Yeah. It's a great game. I have it, too.
I enjoy it. I think, I hope that Kickstarter goes up soon.
Yeah, that was a while ago.
Yeah.
It'll be up soon.
I hope so.
Maybe.
We'll see. I hope so.
So we'll use a deck of cards so Rob doesn't whine about it. Randomized resources. So you go to the resource station. Maybe it's the Tossie station. I don't know. But you go to the resource station and you get resources.
Well, so we need the net justification for you're going in and you're retrieving. You don't know what you're going to get, right?
You're getting an airdrop.
You're getting an airdrop.
Oh.
Interesting.
That's smart.
Airdrop. I was going to say you reaching through some kind of magical portal or something. Well, you're dipping your bucket in the well, but I like airdrop better.
Yeah, I was going to say bag of holding, but yeah, I like airdrop better. You know what this reminds me of? This is a good theme. Cargo cults. Have you guys heard of cargo cults?
No.
So cargo cults are, mostly uncontacted peoples. You know what that is, right?
Yeah.
Like there's some people in the Indian Ocean still who still have not been, like, they, like, chase away anyone that comes near them or whatever.
They're in the Indian Ocean?
Yeah, they're swimming, Rob. There's an island.
So you just said they're in the Indian island. Ocean.
And I can't remember what it starts with an S, but this group of people, and they'll chase away, they murder.
Is it the Solomon Islands?
No, the people. I don't know what the name of the island is, but the people, it's an S something.
Solomon Islands are way east of
that. I don't know. I just know that there's all kinds of mysterious things always happening in Solomon Islands.
When?
Just all the time, man.
Is that in movies?
It just is. It's a thing.
Anyway. So anyways, cargo cults. The idea, and I don't know if this is where I found out about this, if like...
You might have made it up.
The idea that they worship the airdrops as if they were like a god. Like God has dropped their tribal god is dropping supplies for them, right? Because they don't understand what an airplane is. So it might as well be God. They don't, right?
It's like the gods must be crazy with a Coke bottle.
Right.
Yeah. Have you seen the movie?
Oh, gosh. It was a long time ago.
It's good.
Yeah, it's good. It is good.
They get a Coke bottle?
Yeah, a Coke bottle falls out of the sky into this African tribe in the middle of the Sahara, I guess, or Serengeti or something. I don't know. Anyway, and this guy, he finds this Coke bottle, and he's like, he's no context for what a Coke bottle is. And it's this miracle tool that he can use. He can carry water in it, and he can grind his grain with it, and he can hit things with it, and it's amazing. And then he realizes once he gets it back to his tribe, he shows everybody all the wonderful things he can do with it. Everybody starts fighting. Everybody wants a Coke bottle, and he thinks it's this wonderful boon, and it's going to bring so much joy to his people. But it turns out it creates hatred and animosity, and he realizes, oh, the gods must be crazy for giving me this thing. And so he goes on a quest to return to the gods.
Wow.
It's a really good movie.
I want to watch this movie now.
Yeah. It's funny, and it's good, and kind of poignant.
So what I took out of that, though, was no one should buy the world a Coke, because that would be, clearly, that would cause chaos.
Yeah. But Coke is delicious, man. Coke is it.
Yeah. Okay. Anyways, so what about the idea of, like, it's like these uncontacted peoples?
Okay.
And so, yeah.
I don't like that. I like it in a more military context.
Oh, gosh. Okay, that's boring. All right, let's do that.
Or maybe, how about this? All right, the players are colonists, and we're trying to colonize a planet, okay? And long, long ago, they shot us off from the Earth into space, and they also shot off a bunch of supply ships. But we don't have the record of what's on the supply ships and the supply drops. And so we're going to try and build our new society on this planet. And every now and then, another supply drop is going to crash down onto the surface of the planet, and you don't know what's going to be in there. And every time it hits, it might also smash something that you've built.
Oh, that's a nice twist. That's some irony.
Yeah. But you might, maybe it's worth it, and maybe it's just a bunch of socks. You know? But maybe it's actually, you know, a
more
bunch of
ties?
Right. We're going to die, but we're going to look good.
At least if it was towels, you know, it'd be something useful. Yeah. You could do a lot with a tie, to be fair.
Yeah.
You could tie things. You could look good.
Not big things, though, because ties aren't that long. But
you could tie them together.
You could
unless they're silk ties, in which case...
Yeah. So that's my idea. Okay, colonizing a new planet.
That's better than military.
Okay.
Yeah. That sounds more cooperative, though.
Well, maybe we were all shot off from the Earth by competing governments.
Well, or even you were shot off from the Earth as a team, but it's been so long that now you've broken into distinct groups.
That could be.
So now you're fighting over, because it's humans, right? So of course, like, they got all mad at each other and decided to try and kill each other.
Right.
So, yeah.
So it's mechanics, though. You got to make sure the drops are coming kind of equally, though, right?
Yeah. So there would have to be... How do we do that?
I mean, at the start of every round, a card comes out. Like, or at the start of every round, five cards or whatever, X cards are put face down, right? And then... or maybe they're...
And then I think you have to have a grid of spaces on the table. And
gosh, you and the grids.
Wait, but so if you... So if you drop the thing... If you forget about the part where it could fall on something that you built.
Yeah.
And it always falls in the same place.
Well.
Now you've got factions that can try and be closer to the drop so they can get it faster.
Yeah.
And you can compete for the best position.
Well, my idea of the grid was that it's, you know, it's numbers across the top and letters down the side, and you flip over a number card and a letter card, and that identifies where it is.
And the cool thing would be if it did fall on something you owned, while it broke that, you would obviously get first dibs, because, you know,
you were
there.
Right, right.
And somebody else might roll in and try and take it, though.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Okay. And so just through mostly randomization, you would have roughly even.
Right, yeah.
So the drops would have to be frequent enough and small enough. Mm-hmm. More frequent and small than fewer and bigger.
And
so
I think
that you'd have better chance of having distribution.
Yeah, there'd have to be like a turn counter, and every X number of turns something falls. But you might also be able to do actions that you can, you know, you can do a satellite uplink and engage. You can, you know, track which one's coming in next, and you could try and trigger the retro rockets and make it come sooner or something, you know? So you can trigger drop now instead of waiting for the next one in line.
Right.
So I think that would have to be, that's something you can build, right? You can build a satellite uplink.
Right.
And it costs certain kind of resources in order to do that, to trigger that, and you hope that it's going to fall near enough to you that it's worth the expense of those resources.
So part of what you're trying to do in the game is influence the drop of the resources.
I think so.
And so you could either influence it, or you could just have something that lets you know where it's going to drop, so you have a little, which wouldn't be as good, but you'd have a little more information.
So you can plan ahead and get your units there to collect.
Or information about what's in the drop.
Yes.
Yes.
So it's randomized, but you have more info than the rest.
Right.
So do you know whether you need to chase it, or you know what it is, so you know to plan what to build with it?
So those are three stations right there. There's the uplink to recall one down sooner. There's the tracking, so you can see where it's going to land. And then there's the scanning unit, so you can see what's in it before it lands. And everybody can build one of those anytime they want. It's kind of like a real-time strategy game in a way.
Right.
You know, and anybody can build that stuff at any time, but you know, there's a big cost to build those things, and you might get smashed. But if everybody knows where the thing is going to land before it hits, then everybody's going to roll in and try and get there.
Right.
And then
but if you're the only one that knows, you can fake people out and stuff.
You can send units to places.
You can send units to destroy other people's facilities.
And you can also do that,
in a real-time strategy.
Right.
Right.
This is more interesting than I thought it was
going
to be.
Me too.
I like where this is going.
This actually sounds decent.
Yeah.
Despite our best efforts, this might be cool.
So surprised, all of us. But
this doesn't usually happen.
So that's some gameplay. That's some mechanical interest there. I mean, what's the goal? Is the goal to wipe out? I don't think the goal should be to wipe out your opponents, because then that's the only thing anybody's ever going to focus on.
Right.
Right.
I think it should be the first one to build maybe a very specific building. That's kind of like a civilization goal. The first one to build.
What if you're trying to build a rocket to get out? To go to another planet.
But we want to build our colony here, right?
What if you're on a moon of a planet, right? You're on Yavin 4, right? But you need to get to Yavin 3, right? So part of the story of the game is Well, you crashed.
Yavin 4 is a gas giant. We would be on the moon of Yavin.
Oh, no, Yavin 4 is the moon.
Yavin 4 is the planet. The sun is Yavin, and then there's Yavin 1, 2, 3, 4, and I don't know how many planets there are. But then the base is on the moon of Yavin 4.
But it doesn't have a name?
What's the moon of Yavin
4? Endor.
Endor, it's the forest moon of Endor also. Endor is the gas giant that the moon is around.
Wait. Oh, yeah, because Yavin 4 is not the same as Endor.
Right, yeah. Different, yeah.
Yeah, okay. So anyways, thanks for the nerdness. So what I'm saying is maybe there were two moons, right?
Factor 10.
And we crash landed on the first moon, but all the good stuff went to the second moon, right? Okay. But more stuff is crash landing, right? So you're trying to be the first person to build the rocket to get to the real place with all the good stuff, because that's like utopia, basically.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
It does. It makes everything you're doing in the game transient, though, and impermanent. That's why I don't like that, because the feeling then of what you're doing is you're just building this to get away from everything.
Yeah, but if not, because you can attack each other, your goal should just be to exterminate the other people. Because why would you want to build up to be in constant war with people?
Well, maybe you are.
You're going to build the temple. That okay. Is going to convince everybody to convert to your thing.
Okay. Maybe.
So the thing about that building from a gameplay standpoint is it does nothing for you in the game.
That's other true.
Than win the game.
It accomplishes nothing but victory.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But once you get it, then everybody's like thinks you're the anointed.
But if everyone's trying to build the temple, and they're like, oh, it's us. Oh, he beat us to it. I guess he's the anointed. Like, that isn't...
Yeah.
Okay, maybe we can get even more sci-fi about this, and we are working for corporations, maybe. You know, you're Weyland Yutani, and I'm OCP, and I don't know what you are.
I don't know either. Those are the only two I know.
Yeah, the big movie.
Oh, what's the one from Blade Runner?
That's
the one
I was...
What is that? I don't know. I kind of don't like
the guy's name. What?
I kind of don't like Blade Runner.
All right, I have to go.
I work for Stark Industries.
Yeah. All right. So maybe that's what we're trying to do is we're trying to build the Interstellar Gate. Okay?
Ah,
there it is. We're trying to build the gateway so we can be the first one to connect back to our corporate headquarters on Earth. And then, as soon as that's built, it's all over because they're just going to start ferrying everything through. We don't have to wait for it to come through the stars.
Okay,
that's convincing.
So we're trying to build a Stargate.
Yes.
Okay.
This is called Stargate New Planet.
You can call it Jump Gate, but that's already
Space
taken.
Door. Space door.
It's a space door.
Yeah. It's a space door.
I see why they called it Stargate now.
Yeah.
Space door was less compelling.
Yeah.
So, Stargate, by the way.
Uh-huh.
Like, I know a lot of those shows weren't great, but what a compelling idea, right? That, like, there are these gates all around the universe that you can, like, go through.
Sure.
Anyways.
Yeah, that's no. Just really cool. That was a cool universe they built.
And Stargate Universe, did you guys ever watch that?
No, I never
It was the only Stargate show I actually liked, and it was amazing. These people were on this ship called the Universe that the ancients had used to seed. They had sent a ship ahead and seeded all these places with Stargates. And then like a million years ago, they sent the ship out. And the people open up a Stargate in the first episode and then get stranded on the ship that is like 40 galaxies away from Earth, or from the Milky Way.
It's a bummer. I don't want to do that.
And they have no way to get back. But they keep stopping at planets because the ship is programmed to like stop at planets and
like, they have like a shuttlecraft that's small enough to fly through.
Two. No, they like the Stargate will just open and then they'll walk through it and they'll be on a planet.
Oh, okay.
That's in range.
Okay.
So yeah,
we talked about that before though. I was a big fan of Stargate Atlantis. That was a good show.
I never watched that one, but
I never watched any of the shows because I saw the movie.
Yeah.
In the theaters, and I did not like the movie.
Oh, I loved the movie.
Really?
Yeah.
And so I never watched any of the shows.
But Stargate Universe was better than the movie, actually.
The movie had, what's his name?
Who's Kurt Russell?
Well,
James Spader.
James Spader.
James Spader.
Yeah.
Yeah. But that was young James Spader, and he was still kind of a jerk from those 80s movies, so like,
yeah.
Yeah. But he was really good at being the jerk from the 80s.
He was.
I think he was very good at it.
Absolutely.
You hated him, but he did it really well.
He's great in The Blacklist. I've kind of stopped watching it because it just got kind of boring. But, like, I would just watch his clips over and over again. He was also really good on The Office.
He was on The Office,
and he was Robert California.
Yes.
Somebody took Age of Ultron, the speech Ultron gives, but redubbed it with only lines from Robert California, which was his name in The Office.
Uh-huh.
And, like, he gives this speech that gets him hired on the show, where he's like...
He replaced
Michael, but then he didn't. Then he went and convinced the CEO that he should have their job, and he became the CEO.
Steve Carell. He replaced Steve Carell.
Yeah. But he, in his interview, they're like, you've never sold paper before. And he's like, it doesn't matter. He's like, paper, computers, there's no product. There's only sex.
Yeah.
And I can sell sex. Like, and he gives this speech about it. And in the end, Jim, what's his name in real life?
I don't remember.
Tall, geeky guy.
Yeah.
He's like, oh, John Krasinski.
Yeah.
He's like, this guy blew my mind. And then the first thing he does when they hire him is go meet the CEO, who's Kathy Bates, and convinces her that she should retire and make him the CEO because he's that smart. But he just says these crazy things. Honestly, he's not that different than the character from The Blacklist. I mean, like, because that show is great because he just says random crazy things. Like, something important is happening, and he's just like, there's this episode where this guy is trying to transfer money. Like, and so these people are coming to murder him. And he's like, you've got 60 seconds. The guy's using an iPad. And he's like, do all the fingerprints on there bother you? Or are you not the kind of guy that doesn't bother you? Like, and the guy's like going to die. And he's just having a talk.
Yeah. So, Stargates. Space Doors.
Yeah.
Space Doors.
Space Door, the game.
Space Doors.
I think there's something in this one.
Actually, I think this is not a bad idea.
Yeah.
Not a bad idea.
Because you got to decide how much are you going to spend the resources that you get to mess with the other players.
Yeah.
Or to build up your own capabilities to get better resources, and how much to spend on building a Stargate. Because if you put too much of that too early, you'll just get overrun.
I think, like it. Yeah, and I think there also have to be other buildings you can make that will just generate the same resources for you, you know? Mm-hmm. But they're just not. They're going to be a lot easier to get from the drops, and you're going to get a lot more of them from the drops. But you know, I think are we like four different resource types? Maybe five.
Yeah.
Resource types.
Maybe like four, and then like some special thing.
Yeah.
That's like not a resource, but it does something else. That's to,
like
useful.
Tiberium ore. Is Tiberium ore?
Unobtainium.
No, well,
right.
What was the name of the stupid company in that movie? Oh gosh.
Oh, I remember.
They're making four more of those movies, by the way. Four.
Yeah.
Right now, they're filming four more Avatar movies. Yeah. Who cares?
Nobody cares.
You know who cares? James Cameron.
And, well, apparently Disney, too, because they're spending all the money on it.
He must have brought
them. Yeah, but I think it's Tiberium War. That's from Command & Conquer.
Well, it is still the biggest grossing movie of all time, right?
Is it still?
Is it?
I think so.
I think Fast 8 is on its way to beating it.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Fast 8 beat Star Wars for the biggest opening weekend.
Wow.
Yeah, I couldn't believe it.
Huh.
Fast 8, yeah. I love those movies. They're so stupid.
Well, it's not called Fast 8, though. This one's called The Fate of the Furious.
Oh, you're right.
And it's a trilogy. They're going to do three movies, and then they're going to be done. That's the plan.
Whatever.
I mean, they probably won't be.
Our star died. We can only get four or five more out of
these. Yeah, right. Yeah. they are, like, just turn your brain off, and they're a blast.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I know that's not a fair caveat to make, but...
I'm actually bummed because I've only watched the first one, part of the first one, and the more, like, I feel like I need to suffer through the first couple, because once it gets to four, it looks like it gets, like, crazy.
So the first one is just Point Break, but with cars instead of surfing.
Right.
Literally, it's the same movie. It's Point Break with cars instead of surfing. The second movie is terrible. It is terrible. It's so bad. The third movie is great, and it has nothing to do with anything else. Vin Diesel shows up at the end, whatever. Cool drifting, that's what it's about.
Right. Tokyo Drift.
That's Tokyo Drift.
It's about cool cars
in Tokyo.
I've
seen bits of that one.
Yeah.
And then the fourth one is called Fast and Furious, I think.
Fast and Furious. And that's when it starts
Fast
to, like,
Five.
Gel.
Yeah. That's when they all become superheroes and their superpowers.
Well, no, Fast Five is when they become superheroes.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
Because, like, that literally is the genre. It's like a superhero movie, but everyone's superhero power is cars.
See, Fast Four, the fourth one is still kind of a movie about cars. After that, they're just superhero action movies with cars in them.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
But they look really fun.
They are fun.
So, the highest grossing domestic film at 936 million is The Force Awakens.
Oh, okay.
The adjusted for inflation, the highest grossing domestic film is Gone with the Wind.
Still.
Right. Which would be 1.7 billion.
Yeah, wow.
And then worldwide is Avatar at 2.7 billion.
Okay.
Anybody know what the highest domestic R-rated movie is?
Deadpool?
Nope. That's a good guess, though.
R-rated. Domestic.
Yep.
Terminator? Wow. Terminator 2, maybe?
Was that R? Was that R? Yeah.
The Passion of the Christ.
Oh.
Because it was R-rated.
Yeah.
Which is funny, because the people who went to see the R-rated movie are not typically people who go see R-rated movies. Right. Well, in theory. I mean, I do, but... the highest rated PG-13 movie was Force Awakens.
Okay.
Highest rated PG? Highest grossing, yeah. Finding Dory.
Dory. Yeah. Okay.
Animated movie. Okay. Kill it.
Yeah.
The highest rated, the highest grossing G movie.
Are the Toy Stories G?
I'm not sure. So there's spoiler. It's not that one.
I don't know. I wouldn't even know where to start. Dumbo.
Nope.
No? Okay.
But you're close. Lion King.
Lion King. Okay.
Okay, here's one you guys might actually get.
Yeah.
The highest rated, highest grossing NC-17 movie.
Oh.
Oh. NC-17.
Yeah.
Like Caligula or something? No. NC-17.
I can't think of what it is, but there's one. That it was a big deal that it got the NC-17, but it was not porn. It was a legitimate movie.
Was it Showgirls? Yeah.
Is it really?
Yep.
Highest grossing?
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
So not such a legitimate movie, but...
I've never seen it.
The records that they have in here are crazy.
Yeah.
Highest grossing movie to ever appear on Martin Luther... start on Martin Luther King Day.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I'm a big Paul Verhoeven fan, and I'm surprised I haven't seen Showgirls.
Hmm.
He directed that.
Mm-hmm. So, good news. Now we know all this information.
Sure. Good board game trivia there for us.
Thanks, listeners.
Yeah. How are we doing on time?
We're actually good. We've been talking for an hour-ish. Right. Yeah.
We should probably put the show out of its misery.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah.
It feels like 2 or 3 hours to everyone listening.
Right. So, sorry, builders.
Whatever. They don't care.
This.
The only person we lost in this episode is Daniel Newman. And he cut out in the beginning.
You just can't resist.
He's not listening. Daniel, if you're listening, sorry about all the small talk. Sorry, not sorry. So.
All right. So, Alan, do you have any plugs?
I don't. I just want my Kickstarter things to come.
On real estate. Yeah, soon. I saw the big pictures of it on the boat. Yeah, not on the... I don't know. We'll have it very soon. So.
Bated breath.
Yeah, me too.
It's spelled B-A-T-E-D, not B-A-I.
No?
T-E-D.
I'm not sure what the difference there is, but that's after the recorder, we can talk about that one.
Right.
Yeah. All right, well, thanks, everybody, for listening to this travesty. if you want to get in touch with us and tell us how awful it was and how you're never going to listen again, you can send us an email to buildingthegamepodcast@gmail.com. You can follow us on Twitter @podcastbtg. Jason's @JASlingerland, and I'm @poorly_designed. You can like us on places and give us 5-star reviews where you do, and our Google Voice number is 770-TEL-BTG. And that's going to be the end of that for this evening. Thank you again for listening. Thank you again, Alan, for hanging out with us.
My pleasure. Is it bad I was fast-forward through that part that you just did?
No, it's fine. It's just only the most important part of the show. Jason,
this is my favorite part of the show.
Tonight, I want you to tell us... let's see. I want you to tell us...
I'm bad on the spot. That's what the problem is.
If you had one wish that you could wish for someone else, what would it be?
I can't wish...
Not for yourself.
They would wish for wishes for me. If I could wish one thing for someone else...
Yeah, you don't have to pick who that person is, but I would just, interpret that as you will. Just not a wish for yourself. I don't know.
This is the worst description of a thing ever.
No, if you could wish... Whatever. Don't think too much about it.
I mean, should I wish for, like, world peace? Is that, like, a thing?
Well, it's not for a specific person.
Oh. Well, yeah. Gosh, all I can think of are bad things. I can wish for world peace by wishing for telling. Some people to go somewhere else.
Very telling.
Yeah. Okay. I think we know what you mean there.
We don't talk about politics.
No.
You know what I wish? I wish that Josh Mills.
Uh-huh.
I wish that Josh Mills could just come to terms with the fact that that while he gets really upset with me that I am his favorite board game designer, and that most of his good ideas he stole from me, so including the entire design for Rocky Road.
Yep.
Yes.
Go for the low hanging fruit.
Yep.
All right.
Which my kids also love.
Yeah, it's a great game. Yeah. I should know. I mean, you know.
That's how that works. All right. Good night.
Good night.
Building the Game is a co-production of Imminent Entertainment and Poorly Designed Studios. All of the ideas presented by Rob and Jason are property of the Building the Game podcast. Next time on Building the Game.
We laid it down.
Is this the next week on Building the Game? Is that what I'm doing right now?
Yeah. Probably. Very real possibility. Just saying. All right, I'm just worried about that tipping over.
Well, I mean, no one shake the table, and it probably won't.
All right.
See, look at it. I'm shaking the table, and it's not tipping over. Minor, okay, that's probably like a one. All good.
I'm sure it sounds like the hotel's falling down.
It's not fair. You can dub in sounds afterwards and pretend you were right.
I'm too lazy for that. You know that.
It's true.